I'm good.
All right.
All right. I see the button.
Oh, now it's right there. Woo. It's an easy one today. We have an easy one. Oh, are you on your, like, direct connection? You just went a little blurry for me. Like.
I think so.
Okay.
All right, Spore, you ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
All right, we're live.
Going live.
We are live. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Electric Podcast. I am Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How's it going this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Oops, sorry. That's my bad. That's my bad. That's my bad. All right. All right. Sorry about that. Okay. Yes. All right. This week, we're going to start with the big scoop. Big scoop that we had yesterday. Posted yesterday, and it had quite the impact around the market and around Tesla investors and shorts, too, that went after me after I posted that. It was really a kill the messenger situation going on there. We posted an email yesterday that Elon sent out to every employee at Tesla telling them that the company has a shot for 100,000 cars delivered in Q3. So you guys have been asking about us to about that for us to give you some kind of target that Tesla was aiming for, like what kind of delivery numbers. It took us a while, but we couldn't figure it out exactly. But now that Elon broke the news to employees, it became clear. We speculated that 100,000 could be the target here, but now 5 days from the end of the quarter, Elon confirmed it. And because the fact that he said it 5 days before the quarter, it looks like it's very possible. And it's not a diamond issue, not a diamond issue at all, because he's talking about 110, the quarter trending. So by the end of the quarter, trending at 110,000 net orders for the quarter. So including cancellations and everything. So that's on its own, it's fairly impressive. But the challenge is, according to Elon, the challenge is, I'm quoting, challenge is making sure that we have the right car variants in the right locations and rallying as much as our company resources as possible to help with the end of the quarter deliveries. So that's pretty normal. I mean, we've seen that the last few quarters. Tesla is trying to deliver inventory vehicles to customers where they have them. And basically, every part of the company, every employees, whether we're talking executive, designers, engineers, everyone is involved in delivering cars in the last few weeks of delivery rush. I mean, last quarter, we said when I went to pick up deliveries, one of Tesla's head designers were there in Los Angeles helping with pick up. We heard yesterday that Tesla's new chairwoman was helping out deliveries in Australia now that the Model 3s arrive in Australia.
That's Robin Denham.
Robin Denham, that's right. This quarter, Australia is going to be an important market for Tesla. Tesla expanded in right-hand drive market. And a few deliveries last month, but the biggest chunk of deliveries is going to be this month for Australia. And it looks like they're going to contribute 2,000 to 3,000 cars this month. For the quarter, I should say. And of course, Tesla Australia is not used to that kind of volume, to handle that kind of volume of deliveries. So everyone is on board. And Robin Denham, for people who don't know, I don't know. She's Australian. I mean, she's been working in Australia for years. I'm not sure if she is Australian.
Yeah, she is.
I don't think I've ever heard her talk. That's what I'm saying. Like, never mind. I ever heard like last time, last June, shareholder meeting.
Yeah, I actually met her at the Model Y event. She was pretty nice.
Yeah. All right. And that this plays into also what we've been reporting in the past few weeks, where Tesla has been sort of getting to those end of the quarter incentives to deliver cars by the end of the month. And at first it was like 2 years of free supercharging and two free deviations, whether it was wheels, paint, or interior configurations. And then Tesla changed those because people were using them to generate new orders. And by people, I mean like the Tesla staff and also customers that were aware of the discount, if we can say, were placing new orders based on that information. While Tesla wanted to use it more as a way to take existing orders and match them to inventory vehicle and be willing to take a loss on some of the features in order to deliver them. So it was more of a logistic type of incentive instead of a demand incentive, which again, now is explained by the fact that Elon says that they are tracking at to reach about 110,000 net orders for the quarter. So demand is clearly not an issue. So I post this. I think it's valuable information. I get the information. I share the information. That's what I do. I check. And then I get maybe 2,000. At least yesterday, last night, as of last night, it was 2,000 tweets. I've stopped looking. So I'm sure by this morning, I have even more notification on my Twitter. I don't look at, I don't turn it on. Mainly from Tesla short, because I think the stock jumped like 6% after the news or something like that. And
it gained $2 billion in market cap.
All right, so
that's quite a post.
Yeah, of course, I don't know it's gonna have this impact. I mean, I have a pretty good idea that it's gonna be positive, because even though the number was already thrown around, now it looks like it was very likely to be achieved. But I posted it, and the amount of people that think from the shorts that Elon is just feeding us this information directly, something like that, and they think that it is to get around the SEC regulation and he cannot tweak things too much anymore, and that's just the way to get around. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I'm not in Elon's head, I don't know, but I know for sure that Elon is not sending me those emails directly. And it's not hard to come to this conclusion when he sends the email to everyone in the company. There's, I don't know, 45,000 to 50,000 employees at Tesla now. The likelihood that it gets leaked is pretty high nowadays.
It's almost certain.
But it is not certain. You cannot know for a fact. So I think he's safe on the SEC side because of that. And on my part, I mean, I didn't make the decision to like, of course, you know, they're not supposed to leak the information, but once I get it, I share it, like it's what we do at Electrek. We try to inform our readers here. But, and obviously, what's the impact really? Like, if market is more informed, that's it. That's the only impact. Now, in this case, the market was apparently not thinking that Tesla was going to deliver 100,000 cars, and now it becomes more likely that they will, and it had an impact on the stock price. Oh, they also said that I was trading on the news that I made Tesla trade to benefit from the news there, which is of course not true. I mean, Seth can be a witness here. I got the email posted in the newsroom, and the post was up like what, 10 minutes later, maybe, like something
at the most.
Yeah, something like that. So I get the information and share it right away, and I didn't make any trade during those 10 minutes because I know it would be illegal, of course.
Yeah, and like if that is at 45,000 other people's inboxes, there's a chance that another publication is going to get that same leak. So we want to be the first to break the news.
Exactly. I think eventually some other publication got it, but like hours later. Anyway, so the email was certainly confirmed before that from us. But anyway, the SEC is welcome to go check my trade history. I'm confident that I never did anything wrong with that. And I don't even trade Tesla anyway. Like, when I think that it's way too low, I just buy and I hold it. That's it. I sell it if I think it will go way too high, which hasn't been the case in years, really. Like, whenever last time that Tesla just jumped like past 340 or something, like 360, something like that. That's when I think the last time I sold, because I didn't understand why it would be that high at the time. And that was like three years ago, something 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I bought in the latest dip, of course, and that was before the summer, like late spring.
Under 200?
Like yeah, 80. I dip under 200. I had an average. I just kept buying. I had an average under 200 too. My average now is under 300 because of that. So I feel pretty confident going forward, but I don't plan on selling anytime soon. Because I think this is in good position right now going forward. And let's talk about that with some other news that came out this week. Starting with Tesla's continued lead when it comes to the user interface and software. Tesla V10, we've talked a lot about it in the last few weeks because we had a pretty good look at it from the early access program. But now it's starting to be released for a wider release to not necessarily the whole fleet, but right now, as Elon has been stating in the past few months, that people who bought the FSD package, they will get the software first. So right now, in theory, at least, I've seen people who don't even have FSD getting V10. But anyway, in theory, you need to be in the US, you need to have bought FSD, and you need to have checked the software in the software settings, the advanced settings, to get like the latest software. And something that this introduced like maybe a year ago or something. We've never seen it have a big impact on when you get software, but apparently now it's going to make a difference. Anyway, the news really here is that in the wider release of V10, there's some other feature that we didn't know. Well, that weren't in the early access program. Yeah, we kind of knew, especially in the main one, which is Spotify, of course. We kind of knew what's coming. Elon like confirmed it, but the timing was never clear. And it wasn't in the early access program. But we speculated that it wasn't because didn't really need to be tested in any way, because the Spotify integration already exists in Europe for Tesla's vehicle in Europe. But a few interesting things here. So it doesn't replace Slacker, apparently. It's like just added on. So it's another option than Slacker. So you can just choose Spotify. You need a Spotify premium account. So, although I think that's already fairly popular with people. Now, they really just say that you need a premium account, but I would assume that you can just use it with ads, because you can use Spotify without a premium account and you get ads. The only difference is that, right?
Yeah, and that they had Spotify accounts in Europe, so I don't know why they would be different here, but I don't know. Neither of us have gotten V10 yet.
No, so. I'm not. I got FSD, but I'm not in the U.S. And Seth is in the U.S.
U.S., but I don't have FSD.
Though we have Jamie that is in the U.S. has got an FSD on his Model 3. And we probably got a few other people and a 9 to 5, right? I mean, I think we have like 8 different Tesla owners at 9 to 5 now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so probably we should check with them if everyone got anything. But yeah, Spotify is the biggest news. And did you watch that? Did you end up watching the video that Tesla released for V10 yesterday, last night?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, did you see what they showed, like when they say Spotify, when it zoom in on Spotify and then they have the whole like series of videos about like being free of people who are really animals and whatever freaking out. Like they knew like they needed to bring that thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's just so weird because it's been on cars in Europe for, I don't know, like 5 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like should have been such a big deal.
It looks clear at this point that it was a contractual issue. Like they had probably the exclusivity with Slacker. Right. And now they're still with Slacker, so probably they still have a contract with them, but they don't have exclusivity anymore, so they can introduce it in the North American market. I've never used the Spotify integration in Europe, on a Tesla in Europe, but it looks like a big improvement on Slacker at the very least, though I heard a lot of complaints too from Tesla owners there that it's definitely not as good as your Spotify app on your phone. But the good news is that you also have some improvement to the Bluetooth setting on Bluetooth media. How can I say that? Improvement to using a Bluetooth on your phone media through your car. Things like the album arts were always failing all the time. Like 25% of the time you get the right album art on your car. And now it's not the case anymore.
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever seen album art from my phone on my car.
I've seen it. I still see it today, but, and I'm not on V10, but yeah, sometimes it's not the right one. Anyway. So you could still use your Spotify on your phone and just stream it to the cars. Not that big of a deal. What else coming out? Yeah, for people where Spotify is not used or maybe not allowed or whatever reason, they have other alternative for like the China. They have Ximalia service is going to be available for podcasts and audiobooks. Big news also for standard Model 3 owners and standard Range Plus owner. They will have access to Spotify, TuneIn, and Slacker when connected to Wi-Fi. So I don't know if that means that they could connect to a hotspot with a phone and use it when they move. But then at this point, why are you just not using it on your phone and streaming to Bluetooth? Is it really that much better? I don't know. The browser is now, internet browser is enabled in Model 3. Standard Range and Standard Range Plus. All right, Tesla Theater, we already talked about it. It's the Netflix and YouTube and Tesla tutorial. Now it also includes with the rather release Hulu Plus live TV. So if you have a Hulu account, you can just link into that. And China is going to be, I'm not going to try to pronounce that, IKEA? Anyway, and that Tencent videos, which of course Tencent is a investor in Tesla. Some other features, Sentry Mode and Dash Cam, finally going to use the rear view camera, which can be useful. Also, driver profile, there's a note in the wider release notes about more settings that can be automatically adjusted when you choose your driver profile, but they don't say what are those settings, so that's not clear. Of course, right now you have like the steering wheel, you have the seat, you have the side view mirrors. Don't know what else is going to be included in that, but apparently there's a few things going to be included in that. Not in the release note, but if you watch the video, we just referenced that Tesla, like 49 seconds video that kind of teases everything that's in V10. At one point, they just rolled down a bunch of features super quick, and that includes the car wash mode. So I would assume that it's a setting for your cars when you get into a car wash and that facilitate that, but probably like puts it in neutral, I would assume.
Yeah, that's been the kind of an issue for some people.
Yeah. All right. Mobile app with V10, you also have, you can update it independently. The update is already released, is the 3.10.0. But if you have a V10 also in your car, when you combine those, you have new features that appear. And some of the features include venting the car so you can open and close the windows from the app. So that's something that people have been asking for a while. Now it's available. And you also have a defrosting feature that appears where they will launch a defrosting system and also put the max heat in the car. So if you're under a ton of snow, it will melt it pretty quick. So I've already been doing that myself when there was a ton of snow outside, but I had to activate everything independently. Well, now you just click on defrosting and everything is going to go at once at max speed. And of course, there's a big update through the Smart Summon that's been released. That's the biggest change, really, the easier change in the application. You have the whole new interface with the Smart Summon that it's not just like forward and reverse now. It's a whole map system where the car sees you and plans a path to you. Or you can also send it to places. You can say, go there, and the car is going to navigate it. Only works in private parking lots. If you think you can use it in your own driveway and things like that, it doesn't work all the time. Because it needs to really detect that it is in a private driveway. So if it's a short driveway situation, it might think it's like in the street or something like that. So it won't work. Some people manage to make it work, but don't expect necessarily to have it work in your own driveway. Of course, the big thing with Smart Summon, like, it's people, is it really going to be useful? With the non-Smart Summon, the use cases were already pretty limited to people. We have a very small parking space, and getting in and out of the car was difficult. So instead, they just get out before getting the parking space and just backing in or drive it forward.
Yeah, we have
now this thing.
We have a very small spot for our Model X. She almost said 10 in our garage, and the regular summon won't go in unless we override it like 3 times. So it like freaks out when it gets real close, and then it gets halfway in, it freaks out again, and then we have to just keep going forward, and finally it works. So it's not really worth the extra drama for us.
I don't think the Smart Summon will make a difference for that, though. That's really the limit of how close you can get, really, right, before it accepted. Though Elon did mention something about that earlier this week, where he said that they could potentially let you change those limitations, or like how close are you willing to let it go. And so for people who have limited space like you, you could change those settings, and if you feel comfortable with it, the car will try to move into the space on its own. But I think that could also work with the limitation of the base summon. The update is more about how to navigate like private parking lots, large parking lots, like commercial parking lots.
Right.
So, again, I don't see much of a use case myself, but I'm sure that now that hundreds of thousands of people are going to have it, some of them are going to find some use cases, I'm sure.
And one of our colleagues at 9to5 Google also seems to have found perhaps an app Easter egg-y kind of thing related to Summon. And hopefully we'll have more on that soon.
Yeah, it's not clear yet. We would kind of need to test it. All right, let's move to Gigafactory 3. Because that's for the next year or so, that's it's really the key to Tesla's growth, I think. And there was a bunch of news this week that kind of gave us a good idea of what's going to happen in the next month or so. First of all, let's talk batteries. Tesla was supposed to make their own battery cell or at least partner with the company to make this battery cell at Gigafactory 3, much like they do in Gigafactory 1 with Panasonic. That didn't happen so far. We think that it's mostly because they wanted to accelerate the plan of Gigafactory 3 due to the tension between during the trade war between China and the U.S. And they went, at least based on two different reports now, they went with LG Chem out of a factory that's not too far from Shanghai where Gigafactory 3 is. But now a new report this week, that was again the second report that mentioned that LG Chem is going to supply the batteries for Gigafactory 3 and the Model 3 program there, also state that they are starting now production of those cells at the factory, and they are switching to NCM chemistry instead of NCA. Which is, of course, what Tesla was using for its car. Tesla was already using NCM, but for its stationary energy storage solutions, Powerwall, Power Packs, and now Mega Packs. And so that would be a big deal if the Chinese-made Model 3 now use an NCM battery cell instead of an NCA. And it's especially a big deal within the context of the last few weeks we've been talking about a new battery cells coming out that Tesla's Canadian partner researcher Jeff Dunn's team out of Dalhousie University. They've been working on that, what has been dubbed right now the million mile battery cell, really. And that is based on the NCM chemistry, a new NCM cathode, really, a single crystal NCM cathode. So we're not saying that that's what in this battery that LG is starting production, but again, it's interesting in the context that they've been working on that. They're saying that that will come to electric vehicles. And of course, all the Tesla naysayer, that was their quick retort that, oh, right, it's a 1,000,000 mile battery cell. But Tesla doesn't even use NCM battery cells in their cars. And now we have this report coming out of China. That's very interesting. So something to keep in mind. I'll take everything with a grain of salt right now. We'll need some more information, but very interesting. Second thing came out about the Gigafactory this week was that looks like production is starting on October 14th. So makes sense on the original timeline, but came out almost like 3 quarters ago, really, like earlier this year when they started construction. I think Elon said that they were aiming to start early in Q4. So early in Q4, that's October. And now this new report is based on comments from Tesla China, an executive in charge of the industrial zone where the Gigafactory 3 is located, and also a Tesla supplier, Saint-Gobain, who's a big glass supplier for Tesla. Apparently, they build their own factory at the same industrial zone to supply the Model 3 program. And they said that they are starting mass production on October 14th to match the start of Model 3 production. Of course, glass is not like early in the process of producing a car, and it's easily added through the final assembly. So they don't need it early production, so they want to match it so they don't have a huge inventory that they're sitting on before they start volume production. And they also mentioned a second phase for Model Y. So they now partner with Tesla for their Model 3 program. They said we might invest more for Model Y. So we heard that Model Y is still in the plans for Gigafactory 3. But everything looks set for start of production. Tesla China confirmed completion of the first Model 3 body in white. So whole body production on their way now in Gigafactory 3. And just in 2 to 3 weeks, they plan to go from that to a general assembly of the car there. It would still be interesting to know really at the level of production we're talking about here. I doubt that they're going to be producing their own motors, their own drivetrain, their own battery pack there. Though they do, LG says they're producing battery cell in China from them, so I would assume that they would need to produce the battery pack in China too, right?
Maybe the first couple off the assembly line have one shipped over. I don't know.
But they would need then to ship the cell from China
So that makes sense.
To the US and then ship them back. So yeah, maybe they do everything there then. Who knows? Maybe not the motors. They could ship the motors from... Anyway, we'll see. Next 2 weeks are really very interesting. And we're just talking about that before we started the show. Gigafactory is going to be really important for the growth of Tesla. Because if you look right now, looks like Tesla is at a 400,000 cars a year run rate. Looks like they can maintain that, but of course they don't want that. They want to double every year almost. And next year, Tesla is likely going to take at least a small hit in the U.S. early on, the first half of the year, partly because of the federal tax credit going away completely this time. Model Y coming also maybe has an impact on sales. Closer to start of production Model Y, people might be waiting for it. Some more competition on the electric sector, though I haven't seen that big of an impact on Tesla from competition so far, but that might change. So China is likely going to be a big factor here with a Chinese made Model 3, China made Model 3. So the runway in Gigafactory 3 going into the new year is going to be very important. Tesla says it's going to be at 3,000 units per week. But let's be honest, that's sound optimistic.
Well, they've been optimistic, and it seems like they've met all their goals with the Gigafactory 3. Yeah. So maybe this is a new thing for them.
Yeah, they have a different team for sure, and seems to be working fine so far. So we'll see. All right. Tesla started monitoring data use on the Model 3. We've seen that coming in and out. Some owners got it, and then it went away, and then came back. I'm talking about in some of the latest update. Again, it came in and came out. So it's like I got that same update that was like 32.2 or something, and I didn't see it. I didn't have that. What I'm talking about is if you click on the Tesla logo on your Tesla, where it tells you like your VIN number and everything like that, like your mileage and everything. Some people saw a counter for data usage. Like it will tell you like 0 out of 50 gig, and it was apparently a limit of 50 gigs. That just came on, no indication whatsoever why. What does it do? But it's clearly counting data usage. Sorry. So that's somewhat interesting in the context that Elon said that it would finally launch the premium connectivity package, the service that's supposed to cost you $100 a year and give you access to feature like satellite view maps, traffic visualization, in-car streaming media, the internet browser, and so forth. However, most cars are supposed to come with premium multimedia since last year, and so that would be mainly an issue for like the standard range and the range plus car and everything like that. But cars that are supposed to have premium connectivity package, I've seen the same counter. So it's not clear. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice right now. It's not clear it's related to that in any way. So we don't know what we're talking about here, but Tesla is definitely starting to look more at data usage. And it makes sense, of course, because the fleet is growing so fast. And Tesla is by far the most connected cars out there. And I'm sure that their broadband bill is starting to be a more significant portion of their cost than the originally were when it was just a few thousand cars. And Tesla said that it would be like, I remember Tesla saying that, oh, you're going to be free for 4 years. You're going to have full connectivity for 4 years. And then those 4 years came and went. And my 7-year-old Tesla is still connected to the internet the whole time, and I've never seen a bill for it. So,
does your Model S mapping do the tiles on the map come up pretty quickly, or is it a little bit slow?
To be honest, I haven't used my Model S for a while now. Okay. My parents are using it.
Call your parents,
yeah, I should ask them. But when I used it like last year, never had an issue.
Yeah, so I would get slow mapping tiles, and I was always frustrated. I don't know why they didn't just cache like the area around where I live, because they would have to keep re-downloading it every single time I drove.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if, you know, I don't know now, because I feel like the network's so much quicker because the Model S had that.
LTE?
It didn't have LTE too.
Yeah. It's on 3G.
So it was a little bit slower, and now the maps come up so much faster, but I'm not sure if that's because it's cached locally or if it's because the network's so much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a way to save a lot of data. I mean, most of my data is probably maps.
Yeah, music too, if you use a Slacker. But yeah, traffic visualization, the satellite map are probably the heaviest thing. So something to look at when or if at this point the premium connectivity package launches, because that thing's been announced like over a year ago at this point, and hasn't really been made available. I'm sure that there's some. You have to probably make it because you're selling another person's service at this point, right? No, because they repackage it because they're not reselling the usage of the data. So they're not selling the data that they buy, of course, to a broadband company. They're selling the features that they are enabled through it. So it should be just be on Tesla's side of things. So I don't know what they're waiting for.
I mean, there's also a lot of data theoretically coming down the pike in terms of full self-driving, when you know that's going to be sending a lot of data in and out, theoretically.
Yeah, though Tesla has to assume that cost when they sell FSD, if they sell FSD package, and definitely have to assume that cost. All right, another interesting stuff. Gonna thank the tipster here that sent me that, Blake Quinn. So a few weeks ago, Tesla started in the software update they released. They let you change your wheel configuration from the in-car software. So that's nice if you decide for some reason to upgrade from 18 to 19-inch wheel. The difference is going to be accounted in the software, and the car surrender is going to have the new wheel and whatnot. So that's nice. But Blake is looking at his Model S. He's looking at the new feature, and he finds a wheel that Tesla hasn't announced yet, a new aero wheel for the Model S. So, of course, there's a Model 3 aero wheel available. But and there was back then for the long time Tesla followers, there was a Model S aero wheel.
It was very weird.
Was it like very early on, like probably 2012, 2013, and it was killed pretty quick. Very quick. Then I don't think it lasted a year. And yeah, you're right. It was weird. Like it was a full cover wheel. Like it was completely covered. This is not the case here. This is closer to the Model 3 wheel, though not as covered as it, I would say.
Yeah, I like it more than the Model
3 wheel. They look a little bit better in the Model 3 wheel. They look similar to what we've seen in China. The Chinese... I don't want to say that the Chinese... I don't think it's really... it's not for the Chinese-made Model 3, but just a Model 3 available in China with a different aero wheel. Looks closer to that, but it was for the Model 3. This is for the Model S again. So keep an eye on that to be probably announced soon if it's showed up in Tesla software, but interesting stuff. Next, what we have next. All right, something that Seth was extremely excited about this week. If you follow Seth on Twitter, and I suggest you do, that was probably half of his tweet this week. The juiced scorpion.
Yeah, so this is very exciting, obviously, for me, because it's kind of the hybrid between an e-bike and a moped. And, like, obviously, Micah drives around on, Harley live wires and bigger motorcycles. I don't live in an area where I really need anything like that. So this kind of vehicle is perfect for me. And it was so low that actually my 11-year-old son was able to ride it pretty easily. Mm. So, of course, he's like, oh, God, we have to have one of these. And I'm like, I don't know if I want you driving on the roads with this. But what's nice about it, so obviously probably the biggest deal is the price. It's $1,300 and then another $100 for shipping. So about $1,400, which in the e-bike world is really cheap. For an e-bike, for a regular e-bike. But this is not just an ordinary e-bike. It's got huge wheels, but they're 20-inch wheels. So they're 3-inch wide, 20-inch wheels.
So they're huge tire, it's not a tire that's big.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's more like a scooter tire or a motorcycle tire. It's got a motorcycle light in the front. So like if you're driving at night, the front is like you're in a car. Like it's very visible. It's got a active speedometer and battery meter and everything display. So you have everything there. It's got a huge battery at 52 volts. Usually 36 or 48 volts is the most you're going to see on an e-bike, especially a less expensive one. And it's kind of a moped frame, which is, it's a little bit like the Super 73s that have been happening around, very popular, especially in the cities. But this is kind of like a 70s moped look, and I think it looks amazing. And the motor, it could be more powerful, but the prototype that I drove had a 700 watt nominal and about 1100 watt max.
That's decent for the weight. That's not really a heavy bike, right? Is it?
No, it's not. Well, it's not. It's heavier than a normal e-bike, but it's not much heavier because there's not much to it. So getting up to 30 miles per hour probably took, I don't know, like 10 seconds. So it's kind of a nice situation there. Like for $1,400 out the door, having a bike like that, and even better, like my kid and my wife can fit on it and drive it. It's like, for me, it was like a no-brainer purchase. The big question was I going to get two? And I'm still thinking about that idea. The downside, and there are a few, So it's heavy, you know, more than a regular bike. Also, you'll note from the pictures that you kind of sit really low, which makes pedaling a little bit hard. And this has got like a 7-speed gears. Like it's really a bike. But if you want to pedal it, your knees are going to kind of hit your elbows sometimes. And you're not in a great riding position. And it's impossible to do if you have somebody on it. So, you know, I'm close to 6 feet. If I slide all the way back on the seat, I can pedal pretty well. But if you have somebody on the back of the seat, you're not going to be able to slide to the back. So you can't really.
Have you really tried having someone in the back of this? Because, like, I mean, it is sort of a moped seat, fair enough, but it seems like a short one, right?
Yeah, it's short, but you can put like a, they have like a pad that you can put on the rack.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah. And my son was on the back and we rode.
Though I feel like the weight is going to be like way back if you.
So yeah, that's a good point because I was on the back and my son was riding and as soon as he accelerated, the front wheel went flying up and I went off the back. So, you know, you got to have the heavier person up front.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, great bike, you know, great performance, really amazing price. And it's one of those things like you don't really get the full picture from
pictures.
You need to try it. And like everybody, like we were riding this thing around Brooklyn with the founder of the company. And literally every time we stopped, 10 people would ask how much, where do you get it? I want one of those. let me sit on it. Let me try it. And this was like everywhere. It was almost unbelievable. So
I can see it. But the problem too is that it's an Indiegogo campaign. Though it's not like it's something that like most e-bike manufacturers are doing now for some reason. They just love Indiegogo for the marketing aspect of it. It's not like a startup that's trying to launch its first product and needs the money up front to start production. Juice is now like it's a full-fledged company at this point and they can probably launch this on their own. But because Indiegogo has become so strong for e-bikes now, they just launch it through that. And it's not coming out until March 2020, is it?
Spring, yeah. That's the big downside is like, I want this thing now.
So they loaned you a prototype and you said, I'm buying one. So did they let you get the prototype instead? Or you have to wait for for spring?
No, I had to give back the prototype. So, but I'm being told that there's another juice bike coming for, you know, for me to test in the near future. So that should be nice.
All right. Moving on to Bollinger Mowers. If you don't remember, Bollinger is the used to be New York based, now they're Michigan based electric truck startup that's trying to bring like a very cool looking rugged off-road electric truck. They first had this like Jeep looking kind of vehicle, and then they released a pickup version of it. Well, they released the unveiled a prototype for it. So that was a year and a half ago. Well, the first prototype was unveiled in 2017, so it was 2 years ago. And then the pickup came last year. Now they had an event yesterday to unveil. You cannot even say production version of it because it's not in production. So it's still prototypes, but it's prototype closer to what it's going to bring to production. When are they going to bring it into production? We don't know. What price? We don't know. So that was two things that were supposed to be announced last night, based on previous comments from the company hyping up the event, and it wasn't released. But we do have now the latest prototype, and it looks sick. Looks very cool looking, very aggressive, simple design, very rugged again, very utilitarian too. Like you can get a lot of use of that truck. The configuration inside can be made very simple. They have a ton of storage space. Specs looks decent, not big upgrades from things that were announced before. It has a 120 kilometer battery pack, so you're going to get some use to it. Of course, it's not the most aerodynamic vehicle out there, so don't expect that big of a like highway range out of that thing, especially look at those tires.
It actually might be the least aerodynamic vehicle.
Yeah, not aerodynamic, and also like it's a off-road, on-road vehicle, so they have like those huge tires on them. So it's going to be more like if you actually want to get some use out of this and actually go off-road with it, then it's going to be one of those rare entries in the market that you just don't have that many other options for this right now if you want to go electric. And so the biggest question was the price, because everything looks pretty good design wise, spec wise, and but it has to come at a price that is somewhat reasonable for this. And they've been putting off releasing a price on it. It was supposed to come out with this event this week. They didn't. They said in the coming months they're going to release more details about pricing and timing for production. They partner with a big manufacturing company in Michigan, so looks like production could actually happen relatively soon, the next year or so. At least that's what they've been guiding for the past few years. But I want to see a price on this before getting excited, because if they snap a $150,000 price tag on this thing, I'm like, you're going to get like, I mean, the Jeep-like version could almost get like some of G-Class Mercedes kind of look to it, but more rugged a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking Land Rover.
Yeah, too, maybe yeah. Land Rover. And but if you want to compete with those things, like those things come at a price tag for sure, but they are also backed by Mercedes and Land Rover and big names that carry a lot of weight already for a startup to come up with something like that. But the encouraging thing is that look at the pictures, look at the inside of that truck, look at the outside. As simple as it gets, as minimal as it gets, there's no curve to it, there's no lines, everything is flat, everything is bare minimum, but everything looks solid too at the same time. Everything looks like it's a tank, really. So if there's a good balance here, maybe you can get it cheap. Maybe they can find a way to make it cheap because it's as simple. We'll see. What?
Somehow I don't think so. What's your guess on price? I'm going to say over $100,000.
I think that's a safe bet if you go $100,000. I would like to see like starting at $80,000 maybe. That's what I would like to see. I have to keep in mind that's 120 kilowatt hour battery pack in there. So that alone is going to take you like $25,000-$30,000. So then it comes the rest of it. I think it's, you can make it for $50,000, I think, with a small profit. But would have to be decent volume probably. And I don't think they have that.
Right.
They can promise that to their suppliers and everything. All right, Volvo XC40, very popular little compact SUV, medium size maybe, compact to medium size. It's I think it's a best-selling or second best-selling car for Volvo right now. So very popular vehicle, and it came in plug-in powertrain. Volvo already announced that it's coming with an all-electric version of it. They said they're launching that next month, so we're going to see the all-electric version next month. They are hyping up this week with a press release and the first image of the powertrain, and the emphasizing the safety features of it, really. Like they say it's going to be one of the safest cars out there. Of course, Volvo has a reputation for safety, but now with their... Well, it's going to be their first all-electric vehicle if you don't count the Polestar one that they, because Polestar is Volvo, but they don't sell it under their own brand, really. So this is going to be the first all-electric branded Volvo, and it's looking, again, we don't have really the specs or everything, but it could be, I'm optimistic that it could be a very popular vehicle, really, the all-electric version, because form factor is extremely popular right now. The XC40 plug-in is already popular. So bring an electric version, if the specs are right, if it's... I see it as probably something that is going to be like just a little bit more luxury version of what Hyundai's been doing with the Kona EV and the Niro. It's the same form factor, but just a little bit bigger. And a little bit more luxury.
So they're going to announce it next month, and then when do deliveries?
I think it's going to start pretty quick. My understanding, they're launching the production version. It's not a prototype; they're showing anything like that. Because, I mean, we already seen the XC40 is going to be based on the same platform. They updated the platform to support an all-electric powertrain and everything. So, and they haven't discussed that for a while now. But when they first announced it, my understanding of it is that it's going to be a Chinese-made car for the global market. Which is interesting. So just like Polestar, they would make it in China and send it to overseas market. So that's that poses their its own issues, of course, with the trade wars right now going on with U.S. and Europe and China. So we'll see just what price they can get. And but if you import a Chinese-made Volvo in the U.S., you can probably still get the 7,500 tax credit, right? So if you do get that, yeah, I mean,
it's from the make.
What?
It's from the make. This, you know what's weird, though, is, and we discussed this before, Polestar and Volvo, even though they're the same company, they have two separate allotments of 200,000.
That was interesting when they said that. Yeah.
And, you know, if that's true, like, what is stopping Tesla from saying, oh, we, you know, we're starting a new brand called Elon Car, and we're starting over 200,000 right now?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of skepticism when they did say that, because, like, though at the same time, do Hyundai and Kia get different ones? I think they do too, right?
That they do too, but I think at least for them, Kia is only half owned by Hyundai. Okay. So it's not a full ownership. Okay. But Geely owns 100% of Volvo, and they own 100% of Polestar, even though it's set up in such a way that Volvo owns like half of Polestar, and then Geely owns the other half.
But then Geely owns 100% of Volvo.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not get into that too much. But anyway, the elections are coming too next year. So maybe the whole thing will change. We'll see. Finally, another car that was announced this week. Canoe. I think that's how you pronounce it. Canoe. I've been calling it a Faraday Future spinoff, and I'm sure they don't like that, but I think it's fair if you look at their staff, really. It started 2 years ago, I think, a year and a half ago, maybe something like that. It's it was Stefan Cross and, mainly Stefan Cross and Ulrich Kranz, who were like the number two and three, maybe, at Faraday Future, aside from Jia Yuting. And they were in charge to raising money when the company was in dire need of it. And my understanding, based on inside sources at the time, was that Cross was getting good offers on a lot of money for Faraday Future, but he couldn't close the deals because it was contingent on YT stepping down from his CEO position, and he didn't want to do that. And Krauss was like, you should do it. Like, that would save the company and everything. But it didn't happen, and there was a disagreement between them, and Krauss was said, all right, well, the offer is on the table. They want to invest in an EV startup, and they just don't want to invest in YT, so let's just set up our own indie startup and take their money. And apparently that's exactly what they did. They left, and they left with a bunch of other Faraday Future employees. They started their own startup to build an electric car, and apparently they raised over $1 billion to make it. So in a very short period of time today, after that very short period of time, not today but earlier this week, they unveil their first car, which is named after the company, Canoe. And it is interesting looking, to say the least.
I mean,
I would.
My favorite thing is, like, how do you tell the front from the back?
Yeah. My thing is that it's a car that no one would ever buy. And I think they know it because they're not selling it to. They are letting you subscribe to it. So, it is like, it looked like a van, like a futuristic looking van. With the whole inside, aside from the driver's seat and front passenger seat, it's basically a sofa that you have in the back for people to sit in. It is really built for like a self-driving future, of course. But and like Tesla, they made it like future-proof for full self-driving, where it is equipped with 7 cameras all around the car, 5 radars, 12 ultrasonic sensors. So actually, a hardware suit very similar to Tesla. Full self-driving hardware suit. They're also betting on a full vision-based system, But they say that at launch, it's going to have a little two autonomy, like Tesla Autopilot right now. So you can drive it right now. There's a steering wheel. And they say that the steering wheel is the first true steer-by-wire steering wheel. So I'm not sure how that works exactly on the regulation, because I know that it's not legal everywhere to have a steer-by-wire system. Like, it's been discussed forever now to have just an all-electronics-based system, but they claim that they can deliver that. So we'll see. But I mean, if you look at the picture from the front, it looks like why it's steer-by-wire is that you could actually remove the whole dash. You could remove the steering wheel. You could remove the dashboard and make it a full... Like you said, you don't see the difference between the front and the back. It would be the same in the interior, where it could be like a... They could quickly make it a full sofa thing all around the car or something. The pedals look removable. Everything looks removable inside. And it would be like really like a lounge, moving lounge, really, that you can move around. In terms of specs, they didn't announce much really, other than the range. They said it's gonna have an EPA range of 250 miles, and so it's gonna be able to reach a full 80% charge in less than 30 minutes. But they didn't discuss the battery capacity or anything like that. Just 250 miles of range. Again, it's gonna be subscription only. It's gonna be a month-to-month thing where you can just pay one amount that includes everything, including the car itself, access the car itself at least. Well, you can do whatever you want with it, but it's also insurance, include the insurance, probably include charging, I think, too. They listed a bunch of things that they can include. And with the release, they are starting the production of the beta prototype that's going to go on the road for a 2 years testing period, and after that they're going to start full production for a launch of the subscription-based system starting in Los Angeles in 2021. What's your level of confidence in that happening?
I don't know. It doesn't seem super exciting. And, you know, it's a fleet vehicle. Also, like, there's no safety. Like, you can't have a couch in a car. Like, you can have a couch in a limo, I guess, but... Like, I don't think in the U.S. you're allowed to have a couch. Like, you can't have kids, like, laying in a couch. And, you know, if you take an Uber, you can't, like, I don't know. It just seems more showy at
concept, this point. Concept-y? Concept?
Yeah, concept-y. Yeah, I don't know. Like, nobody else is doing this particular model, and they certainly seem to have some revenue or
they have cash
resources and some design people, so.
And they've seen what happened. Who they've knows? Seen what happened in Faraday Future. So I feel like they're going to be more careful with the way they spend their cash and everything. And I feel like they could maybe bring this thing to market. I just don't see the appeal to it much right now. I know that there's a trend where people don't want to own cars anymore. So maybe a subscription system is attracting to someone. Especially in the self-driving future. But are we really bidding on this little startup to deliver the self-driving to? Like,
I mean, if you don't want to own a car, why would you do this model versus like robo Ubers or robo Teslas?
I mean, it's still your own car. It's still like that would fix your fear of other people farting in your own car. So it's a subscription-based thing, but only you get the car. It's not like a car share subscription. It's your own car subscription. So you pay a fixed amount of money, and then once you don't want to anymore, it's not like a lease where you have like 3 years and something. You just stop paying your fees and then give back the car.
You know, Hyundai tried something. I mean, obviously not the self-driving part, but they did with the Ioniq. They had a California package which included insurance, charging. And it was just a flat fee. And I don't think it did as well, although...
And it was pretty cheap, right?
It made sense. It was like it was relatively inexpensive. But I don't think they advertised it at all. I mean, you know, Hyundai in general is not really pushing their EVs one little bit, because they're compliance cars and they're really not built to sell in numbers. They're just ZEV credit producing machines. which is unfortunate because they make pretty interesting cars. But you know, nobody had heard, like when we wrote about it, nobody had heard about it. I'd never seen Hyundai talk about it. It was only in California, and it was just, I guess, kind of a pilot program that they didn't continue.
Yeah, but I've heard of other companies doing that, not just for electric vehicles, but like a videographer with, when we work at 9to5, Scott Buscemi, he used to use one before he bought recently Model 3, but before that, he used a service like that that was apparently like quite popular in California, where just month to month, you have your own car. And
I mean, Maven is kind of like that a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, the GM service that
is it not just for
Bolt
for Uber drivers and Uber drivers? Don't know.
I don't think you're required to be a Uber driver, but that's what most people use.
I see the appeal to it for someone like me who's often travels for a few months at a time. So if I'm on another place for a few months, I'd like to have my own car for a while, but leasing is not an option because I'm only going to be there for a few months. But so a month-to-month service makes more sense than just going to rent a car at a rate that's going to be like a per day rate with a weekly discount or something like that. So it make less sense.
Yep.
Speaking of my last day in Montreal for a while, I'm going to be based in Europe starting tomorrow for the next 3 months.
In Moldova?
Come again?
You're going to be in Moldova?
Moldova? No, I'm being vague, right? In Europe? Yeah. According to the Tesla short, the SEC is after me right now, so I'm running away to an unspecified location in Europe. No, I'm going to be mainly in Paris for a while, but I plan on traveling a little bit, looking at the EV market in Europe for a while, like with different, especially now that a bunch of cars are apparently only going to Europe. So the European market is going to be interesting for a little bit more interesting than the North American market for the next year, maybe next year or so. So yeah, if you guys think of something interesting, either in France or Germany, Spain, UK, anything that's relatively close to France about electric, and that doesn't need to be like a big thing. It could be like a small startup too. That could be interesting. It can be two wheel stuff too. I also like two wheel stuff. What else can it be? Anything electric can be an EV conversion. Love a good EV conversion too. Let me know. Contact me either by email or Twitter or whatnot, and I'll check it out. Also, it might mean that we change the podcast timing because it would mean that I would have to do the podcast from 10 to 11 if we keep the same time. And that could be a bit frustrating for me on Fridays. So we're going to get back to you about that, but we might make it a little bit sooner. And we might play with the time for next few weeks to see what makes the most sense, both for Seth and I and for you guys. So let us know about that. What you think would be the best time for like a Friday afternoon type of a podcast like we do now. But otherwise, that's pretty much it. We're going to see you same place, maybe not same time next week. Ciao.